Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And so while you're talking about San Francisco and you do the little fact sheet about the city and geography, because you're learning about fault lines and you learn how many people are there and you learn about how big it is, just mention the fact that it's like the city in the USA that has the largest number of gay households.
Mm.
Because that is...
Well, that's one of the geography facts.
That is a geography fact. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's something that's just not... And you don't, like dwell on it. You're just like, yeah, this is kind of interesting and important. And then you can be like, cause and effect, do gay people... earthquakes, think about it.
If there's questions you pretend you know or are too scared to ask, then listen, mate, you're in the right place, because Lena's got your back.
Hello and welcome back to I'm Not Being Funny, but the podcast where we ask the questions you pretend you knew the answers to, or the ones you didn't think to ask. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I have a very exciting announcement. If you live in London or somewhere in the reach of London or happen to be travelling through London on the 8th of September, I would love to take this chatting, podcast, listening relationship to a physical level. Yeah. So I am going to be at the London Podcast Festival at 2 p.m. on the 8th of September. We're going to be recording a live episode of I'm Not Being Funny But in a big hall with lots of seats. So I am looking for bums for the seats. Do you have a bum? Would you like it to have a seat? What's happening? It is going to be at King's Place near King's Cross Station. If you would like to buy a ticket, you can find links on my Twitter at Lena Norms in the description of this podcast, or you can go to po.st/Lena, LEENA, at AT Podcast Fest. My special guest is none other than the absolutely bloody lovely Laura Jane Williams. Laura is a writer, columnist, and wrote this incredible book called Ice Cream for Breakfast. So we are going to be chatting about how to ditch bullshit adult problems, times when we've been tempted to swap property ladders for blanket fort competitions, credit score counting for a good clean game of hopscotch, asking if we really do need to grow up, if it's okay to seek praise, and most importantly, is it okay to have ice cream for breakfast? It's the first live show for this podcast, so it's going to be a historic moment. I will be around to chat afterwards and see you all, and I'd be really pumped if you could come. Anyway, on with the podcast. On today's episode, we are asking, am I being a dick online? And I'm calling this episode the Queer Edition. So Rowan Ellis was my friend, is now my housemate, mutually exclusive. No, I promise. We are better friends than ever now that we live together. But this was recorded, well, it must have been like a long time before we lived together. Because something that I wanted to discuss on this podcast isn't just the ways that other people can be awful and disgusting, that because it's very unworthy, but the ways that we can be dicks online, maybe to people and not really realise it. And also that recognition that we've probably all been dicks online at some point, or had the capacity to be dick online but no access to a Twitter account. How we reconcile ourselves with that, how we spot and explain when companies are being dicks online. And I wanted to talk to Rowan because she is an expert in queer theory and the history of queer rights and is very active online, which, as you can imagine, brings some interesting opinions to her court. There are always silly questions I want to ask around this topic, and I always feel like it's not the right time. So this is a podcast really for me to make the right time, in inverted commas, where I can ask all of these questions. And I hope that this also helps you if you've been ever thinking about asking these questions or wanting to know more about how people who exist in a digitally queer space deal with the kind of issues that come with that. Also, in this context, we get to witness me live learning what a TERF is from Rowan, which is really interesting because this interview is probably recorded about a year ago, and I thought I have always known what a TERF is, but clearly not. It's actually a very recent learning for me. So there you go. If you don't know what a TERF is, you're about to find out. So this is me and Rowan asking, am I being a dick online?
So I wanted to talk today about being a dick online, because I think it's one thing that I am ridiculously afraid of being. I am daily say that other people are being a dick online. And I think a lot of the conversations on Twitter at the moment are about who's being a dick online. Mm-hmm. And but I think it's also like good to recognise when you have been a dick online. And like something that I'm really, really thankful for, like straight off the bat, is that I did not have Twitter when I was 14. Mm-hmm. Because when I was 14, I like, aside from lots of other really weird beliefs that I picked up being a teenage Christian, was that like I thought that being gay was a choice. And I thought that like you probably shouldn't be allowed to get married if you were gay. And those
classic,
are things that
classic stuff.
But another one of my privileges on top of all my privileges is I have the privilege of like no record of that. Like there's no online record of me saying those things or thinking those things. And at the same time I had no access to any other opinions because of not having the internet. But yeah, but has there been any times where you've been a dick online?
So on Facebook, on there, this day in the past, I looked at it, it was like maybe 4 months ago, and it was from when the very first year I got Facebook, it's like 8 years ago, and it was a post that my friend had made, and he's biracial, and I'd just done a comment about colourblindness in like a completely like, shouldn't we all just like not see race? Like, wouldn't the world be amazing if we all just saw nothing? And I'm like, that's on Facebook, so literally no one can see it except for people who I'm like friends with IRL, as it were. And I commented on it being like, lol, like Rowan 8 years ago was like was a dick. And everyone was like, lol, it's hilarious. But like I do think that if that had been something that was more public, in which it was kind of these people who are not your friends or people who know you and know you as like a whole person and can and know who you are now and can look back at who you are then and have it in context, then I can see how it could have been something that was pinned against you, that was like, this is a thing that you used to believe, therefore this is part of who you are now. So I was like, oh, good times. In terms of being a dick recently, I try not to be a dick. I mean, like, but I do think I generally subscribe to the idea that you call out culture is like kind of toxic, but I also understand that people get angry and that there are sometimes that people are like, this isn't necessarily about you, one person that I'm angry at. This is the fact that like you are the 50th person to have done this exact thing to me. And so this like anger that I'm expressing is the accumulation of like many bits of anger that have been building up inside of me. And so I've probably been like super short with people and super kind of just blunt to the point where like potentially that would not have been the best way of engaging them if I wanted to like change their minds. But I think it's also healthy to acknowledge the fact that you are not the one person who is going to change that person's mind. Like it's such a I think that everyone's made to think that like everything obviously you do has consequences, but it's like you are the one person who's going to change this person's mind, and if you don't then it's a failure, if you do it's a big success story, when actually that person's going to have multiple interactions with people with various different points of view. And it's often when people change their mind about things, it's not this one moment when they're like, oh, eureka, I found it. It's because they're like, oh, this one thing prompted me to think more about it, and this other thing prompted me to be more open about it. And then I slowly started to do that. And then I had someone who came into my work, who I worked with as a workmate, who changed my mind about this particular person because I got to know them as a person. But I maybe wouldn't have given them a chance if it wasn't for that post that I saw with someone I respected who commented. Like, it's such a
web. So it's
web.
Like this web of, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, I do think that there are some people who can be dicks because they're like at the end of their tether with oppression, for example, like being queer and having people question them or do stuff. But I don't necessarily think that one person kind of just getting to the end of their tether can be that problematic. I think it's when you have waves of people in like on either side of an issue who kind of become this coordinated attack onto one person or onto one group of people that it's like, what is that? What is that helping? And it might be that the answer is just like us. It's helping us like unleash our anger and just like get stuff out there and not and just say what we actually think and not be beholden to the idea that we have to be calm and polite all the time about injustice, and that we don't actually care about changing people's minds. And that's fair enough. But I do think that there's something like to me in the way that I function more positive about and more fruitful in attempting to show people alternatives rather than just being angry with them for thinking a particular way, especially because I have a lot of friends, yourself included, it turns out, who, when they were younger, did have very particular ideas about queer people. And a lot of them for religious reasons or for very, like, living in a particularly conservative area. And if I had just written them off because the first time I met them, that's how they said that they thought about things, then that's how they would always think about things, because no one had said to them, hey, maybe there's this other alternative point of view, or, oh, I'm queer, is that how you think about me? Or, like, addressed it in a more... I've had multiple I think that there's this whole thing on, like, this rhetoric online of, like, oh, you don't want to engage in, you're not going to engage in discourse with us, you're not going to have a discussion with us. And it's like, well, there's more than one way to have a discussion, and having a discussion with, like, anonymous, like, people online is not the only way to have a discussion.
You're not Theresa May not turning up to, like, a leadership debate. You don't always have to turn up to everything to...
Exactly. And I've had many conversations with people in public, including with strangers. So when I was in Las Vegas at a convention, which ironically was a convention for queer women, there was a random guy in Chipotle who was like, oh, what are you doing in Vegas? Like, being typical friendly American man. And I was like, oh, I'm at this convention. He's like, oh, is it the so-and-so convention? Like, the dentist convention? And I'm like, no, not quite. And told him, and then proceeded to spend an hour talking to this man who was like the kind of guy who was just on the cusp of, like, some stuff he was very progressive about, but some stuff he didn't quite get. And some, a lot of stuff he was just looking for, like, validation about, like, I think this, am I right? And sometimes you were like, yeah. And sometimes you were like, some people don't necessarily think that way. And I think a lot of those people on the borderline are the kind of people who, the other way around, will be the kind of people who say, I don't see race, like, because they know in their hearts that they don't, like, they're like, I'm not racist. And so that comes out as that thing. And then it takes that extra step further to be like, okay, I need to critically examine how I'm thinking about this and delve deeper into it. And I think on the queer side of things, you get people who are like, you know, oh, I like gay people. I'm just like, you know, I don't like people who are like too in your face, you know what I mean? Or like, I like queer people. I think that, like, it would be really great when we get to a time where no one has to come out. Which is basically the version of, like, being colorblind, right? It's like, no one would ever have to come out. Like, we wouldn't even talk about sexuality. And then I'm like, well, I mean, I probably still want to. Like, it still would be a part of me. We couldn't just be like, oh, no, shush.
Yeah.
So it was, those are the kind of discussions that I do have, but, like, that's because I could see it would be a productive discussion to have with that person, whether or not he, at the end of it, was like, hallelujah, I've changed my mind, or whether it was just a thing that he thought back on and was like, oh, yeah, actually, like, I remember someone said that something similar to me when I talked to them that one time in Vegas. Like, it would be something that's productive, whereas if those same people had come up to me in a Chipotle and been like, fuck you, you dyke bitch. I'm not going to be like, oh, let us enter into a amicable discussion. I'm definitely...
Let me just buy you a burger.
Productive half an hour with you.
Let's sell this over a pound of fries.
Like, that's not how it works. And so there's no reason why that should be how it works online either.
Yeah,
like, there's no reason why people who engage in that kind of way should be... But there's also no obligation. Like, I was under no obligation to stay with that dude for an hour in Chipotle. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could just have easily, if he could have been like, oh, that sounds really interesting, and I could have been, which I probably should have been, like, oh, thanks, but I need to go now because I actually have a panel to prepare for. But instead I was like, oh, what if I just talked to this man for an hour? And that would have been completely fine as well. Like, it's I think it's just one of those things that isn't a one-size-fits-all. And there's always going to be someone else who thinks that your time could be more productively spent dealing with dicks in a particular way online.
Yeah.
And dealing with dicks in a particular way in life. And isn't that just what homophobia is about? Like,
yeah. Do you think that when somebody says something to you, like, online, because obviously you have a platform where people are probably watching your at replies as well as just your own content on Twitter, say, do you feel like you have a responsibility to reply to the dicks? Or are you like, would you rather, you know, and when you reply, like, if you ever had a problem where it's like, are you replying on behalf of you or the people that are being slighted? So say if somebody tweeted you something that was transphobic, would you feel the need to reply because you were sticking up for that group? Or would you reply because you were, like, trying to help that person? You know, it's hard, isn't it? Like,
this is, like, giving a platform just to happen voices. To me.
Yeah, okay.
Like, so I have a friend who's currently getting a lot of trash for her particular identity, and I've had to be like, I see that your mentions are a mess. But I would like to school these people. Do you have any, like, shall I tag you on Twitter? Like, shall I un-at you?
Yeah.
So I'm just replying to them. Just to get to know, because I'm like, some people will be very much like, I want to see people sticking up for me. I want to keep the at in there so I can follow along. Mm-hmm. And then some people are like, no, I don't want any of that in my notifications. Mm. Like, you go fight the battle and then I'll just go into your mentions and
yeah,
see how it
I'll
went.
I'll read the summary.
I'll just read the cliff notes afterwards. And for that, I think it's, for that, it was very much I'm going to go in there and defend my friend because it's part of our identity. Essentially people who have very strict ideas about what particular queer language means. So what queer means, what femme means, what butch means, and who can use those terms. Mm. And I'm show me the receipts, show me the evidence that this is exactly how this term can be used and exclusively how it can be used and what the history of it is. If you're saying that this is something that's exclusive to this one group, sure, show me the evidence. And no one can because it doesn't exist. Because
pull out their invisible wallet of receipts.
Because queer words and queer slang is so nebulous and it's there are so little records of it and it's been changed so much and no one knows any of the origins, and it's just such a weird much of queer history it's just so kind of so I find policing of that language and policing of that history a really strange thing where it's a lot of infighting because people are trying to preserve their identity within this wider group of LGBT people, which is why being a dick within the LGBT community is also a big thing. And I think it's one of those things that when bad things are happening within a minority community, it becomes really weird because you're we want to discuss this and resolve it, but we don't want it to look to the outside world we're having this massive infighting and we're just this bunch of people who can't
get along decide on what
and,
their message
you know,
is.
They don't know what they're doing and
guys, you need to start your brand.
Yeah, it's what are we meant to do? And but at the same time, if we don't kind of acknowledge it, then it becomes dangerous for people in the group. So domestic violence is a big part of this. I think that acknowledging queer domestic violence is really difficult because of multiple reasons. One, because it potentially goes against the very heteronormative idea of men are the abusers towards women exclusively, because then it's okay, well, can lesbians never have domestic abuse in their relationships? Can we have gay men who cannot, because they wouldn't abuse another man because the man cannot be abused, and therefore that won't work either. And so but at the same time you have the idea of our relationships aren't legitimate, so we've got gay marriage and things like that have only just become legitimized by the state, and even after we're legitimized by the state, I think a lot of people still don't see them as legitimate. And so if we give to the world this idea, it's please, you think we're not legitimate. Also, we have these troubles too. Less legitimate, even more less legitimate, because we hit each other and we emotionally abuse each other. And I think that there's always that worry of no one will be oh yes, of course. All types of relationships that can happen.
You don't want anything.
Instead,
they'd
be gay people have this much abuse in their relationships, and it would be become a thing. And so I think things like transphobia within the LGBT community doesn't get talked about enough because it would be this trump card, I think, of
see, they're crazy.
See, the gays do it too, and
they're eating themselves alive.
It would just become this huge drama. So I think that there's two kinds of hate that queer people get online, and one of it is within, and one of it's without the community. It's kind of the people who are doing it because they are just homophobic or transphobic and that's how it goes.
Yeah.
But then you also have this homophobia or transphobia or biphobia that comes from within the community, which a lot of it is, it's a big mix. So some of it is about people trying to assert their own identities. So there's a lot of this kind of this weird rise in TERFs which is happening, which is I've read a lot of stuff about it in terms of people who have tracked the growth of TERFs, which
what's
for the
TERFs?
Okay, I was gonna say, I was like, I
please
should
explain
do this. for the podcast / Felina. TERFs are trans exclusionary radical feminists.
I did not know that.
Cool.
Genuinely,
so that's the term. But what essentially it means is feminists who do not believe that trans women are women.
Okay.
That's the technical term, but there's a lot of associations that people have towards TERFs. So I think there's this kind of association that they might also be the kind of people who might be political lesbians. So not actually lesbians, but they'll call themselves lesbians because they're I'm going to choose to not love men because men are
so
anti-men, I'm going to become a lesbian.
Binary lesbians where it's I'm just rejecting the other, so I'm going to have you instead.
Basically, but also the idea of I can just choose... this is one I'm going to choose because I won't give men the power over me to have sex with me. Like all this, it's very, it's kind of like, Lena's face shows how weird she finds that. But it's one of those things that like, delegitimizes because it's like the women's rights movement. But now we have this weird infight thing where it's like, okay, you're saying you're lesbians, but you're not really. And that becomes a really weird
performative.
And that's happening during like the 70s, 80s when you're looking at like performative gender and what does gender mean? And then that becomes really weird. But I'd kind of like had hopes that the TERFs had died out. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was just like occasional TERFs would pop up and people are probably most likely to know them from being banned from universities. A lot of TERFs have been banned from universities because a lot of universities, unions are run by people who are reasonably left-wing and kind of progressive in that way, who are like, these people have very, very outdated views and why should we give them a platform to spread those views that actually can be super dangerous for a group of people who aren't legitimised at all to be like, we endorse this speaker who comes and tells us that they are all like mad and don't understand who they are and are damaging themselves and all this kind of stuff. And are like abusing children by allowing them to stop their puberty or to halt their puberty until they are older and know which kind of puberty they want to go through, all that kind of stuff. And so we've had this weird rise in TERFs where what the theory is that older women who have kind of held this view for a long time have become kind of like spokespeople for lesbians and for like feminists and stuff. And so we have a lot of younger feminists and lesbians who are coming in who are like teenagers who don't really, they're kind of like, I don't learn anything about my history or my people in schools. I don't learn it anywhere else. I'm kind of having to learn it from social media. And so these women can put this stuff out being like, I am a lesbian, I am blah, blah. And this is, what is the truth?
Yeah,
and
like, so I'm a lot of grandmother lesbian.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of these people are like, I am a lesbian and you are the grandmother lesbian and therefore I must believe what you believe and this makes total sense. And it becomes like this really weird toxic environment where you just have a load of young people who don't know their history and don't know what's kind of what's going on because why should they if they haven't been given the information? And so they start to have these beliefs that kind of had died out. Like they were, it was like, this is so ridiculous now. Like we're like, intersectional feminism had taken over and it was very much looking at trans women as being women, looking at black women, at Muslim women, at disabled women, at poor women, at fat women, like everyone being women, and that all of them have their own unique challenges and ways in which multiple ones of those identities intersect with each other as well. To be like a fat black Muslim woman, what does that mean? And then suddenly we're kind of doing this weird reverting back and that's happening like within the community. So I think it's like, a lot of the stuff we talk about is hate that comes from outside that's like imposed on, but it's like just as difficult to be like, okay, how do I approach this like teenage lesbian who's saying some really messed up stuff, but like has no idea why they're saying it, almost just because they saw it online once and then they were like, that must be true.
But that's the nature of being an adolescent, I suppose, isn't it? It's like you, in the same way that you learn to speak by repeating what your parents say, like word by word, when you're learning what your ideas are, you repeat other people's ideas. And that's what's, because I think as well, like when I was just one of the questions that I wanted to ask later, but I'll ask it now because I think it relates. With this way of engaging people online that means that what you're talking about can't be contained. You realize after a little bit of reading about queerness that it can't be contained to queerness. It leaks into domestic abuse, it leaks into general feminism, it leaks into other things, and you can't categorize it. There has been some criticisms on, like, say, my videos where people are like, I don't feel, as somebody who's right wing, I don't feel included in this conversation. I don't find these places for me to talk about what you're talking about because I have right-wing beliefs. And it's like that thing of like, when is somebody being a dick and when is somebody being right-wing, and is being right-wing inherently being a dick? Which is my instinct always. Like, do you think there's spaces to like not try to dissuade people to be right-wing but persuade them to be like an ally for queer people? Is that possible? Is that make you uncomfortable?
So I think that like my general rule about this, because I get, the thing that annoys me more than anything is that I have, there's like two or three people who may be the same person who in my comment sections always post about why have you deleted all these comments from people who disagree with you, which I haven't done.
Right.
And it's so frustrating.
It's like Mandela effect in the comments. Like,
I can't prove that I haven't deleted them, but I wouldn't delete comments just because people disagreed with me. That's not why I delete comments. My policy for deleting comments now, and for a really long time I was like, I felt so weird about deleting any of them, and it really messed with me, and it became this thing that I really obsessed with. And then I was like, do you know what? I have to think about it as if the online world was like real life, as it were. In what situation would I be in which this would be equivalent? And I'm like, actually, my channel is a small thing in much larger thing. So I'm going to think about it as being my house. And I'm going to think about it as being a workplace that I might have worked publicly. So I worked at Tesco. So I'm like, me working at Tesco. And the way I have to think about it is, if someone came into Tesco and said what you have just said to me, would the manager throw you out and ban you from the store? And if they would, you're blocked from my channel.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all it is. So if you come in and you're like, this was really fucking stupid, like blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, if you came into a Tesco and came up to me on the checkouts and were like, oh, you fucking stupid, the manager would be like, out, barred.
Yeah, because you saw, yeah.
And no one would be like, hey, freedom of speech. You can, she can, he can talk to that checkout girl however he wants. It's freedom of speech, mate. He's just saying his opinion. Like, no one would say that because it's ridiculous, because you just screamed obscenities at some checkout girl.
But if somebody was to approach you and go, I see the way you're operating your till system, and I have come from a different belief, and I think you should operate your till system in this way, you wouldn't chuck them out for saying
no. Like that, no one would like, chuck them. I'd be like,
I'd like
fair
to
enough.
Buy this weird kind of bread, and you'd be like, well, sir, I don't know how this, along this analogy.
No, you wouldn't chuck them out. I might, but like at the same time, I have the option to not engage with you. I have the option to engage with the next customer who's come along, who's trying to have a productive time, like buying their stuff or asking a question of me. I don't. I'm not beholden to just sit
or you
there
can be like,
and like listen to you talk. And that's where I think the home analogy works, because that implies that I am like, I'm employed in the act of like listening to you, like my job. So like you have to kind of put up with a lot of stuff when you work in retail, right? It's like, so there are probably some jobs where I would just have to smile and nod at whatever random person came to me, because I'm being paid for it by a larger
and
company that has these policies, whereas the brand is me. So I get to decide what the random policies are. So that becomes more like my house. I'm like, at that point, I'm like, okay, if someone came into my house and just started saying things to me, and I'm like, I never asked for your opinion on this. I'm like, you can say those things to me, but I reserve the right to like shut my window and not listen. And that's like, you're still saying those things. It's still free speech. You can still say those things. You can still say this, like shout it in the street. You can still go to people, knock on other people's doors and
say, you're not gonna get
you
arrested
can go to your own
it.
House and talk about it. I don't care. I just don't, sometimes I just don't want to have to listen or engage with like what you're ranting about. And that doesn't mean that I'm closed off to other people's points of view, because because I'm constantly engaging with people who disagree with me in real life. Like that's something that I have all the time.
It's just like Rowan's
that's
life.
That's like everyone's lives, right? It's like you live in a, you make, the people that you're good friends with, often you won't disagree on a lot of stuff, because the way that socialization works is that you filter out people gradually based on the, so immediate things is like vicinity, location, stuff like that, because you have to actually be able to find them. That's obviously growing because of the internet. Then it's like the next level, like it kind of goes steps and steps to the people that you're going to become closest to. And a lot of that will be about very important core beliefs that you hold within you, where you're like, this is a deal breaker to me. This is a thing that I'm like, actually, in order for me to see you as someone that I can invest my time and my love and my energy into, we can't disagree on this. And for me, that is like, you know, seeing people as human beings who aren't deserving of less rights or less respect just because of the way that they were born. Like that for me is a deal breaker, that I might be able to invest in you as someone who's like a friend of a friend, where we meet at that person's house or at parties and I'll have a discussion with you. And like that often happens at parties where you're the two people in the room who disagree the most will end up like having to potentially slightly alcohol fueled chat for like 7 hours, like all throughout the night.
And you'll find them in the bathroom together.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Because it is like, okay, we're not like super friends, so we don't have to worry about upsetting each other or anything like that. We have very different views, and that happens a lot. But you generally, wherever you are, tend to surround yourself with people who match up to like the fundamental tenets. You might disagree on little things, and it might be that actually there's some things that I wouldn't necessarily care which political party someone voted for. Whereas there are some people that were like, if you didn't vote Labour, then because I have such strong feelings about what Labour stands for, or if you don't believe in what Labour stands for, or what I think Labour stands for, then I don't understand how I can be friends with you, because inherently you must think something different, and that's a deal breaker for me. And there's people on like any, like those are kind of examples from like the left side of things, but there will be people that are like, if you believe that
that there's we more should have than this two kind genders, of, yeah, then exactly. I can't then I engage can't, with you.
Yeah, exactly. Because yeah. it's you're just you make no sense to me. It's the dialogue that we would have would like mm-hmm. we're so running on parallel tracks. We just can't have a dialogue together, and therefore it's like not necessarily that person's like job or role to change your mind or for you to engage with that person and have to sit through something you don't necessarily agree with. Because there's so much information out there. I think that if people still believe that, it's like, what is going to change their minds on either side? And I think maybe that comes down to like what people are exposed to or how that works. But like that's the reality of like, and it always has been that people exist in these spheres of influence that they have. And the way they've been brought up changes how they interact with media and with sources and with critical engagement in all sorts of ways. And their inherent biases that they kind of grow up with that stick with them other things that maybe block out some information. So like when you're, this is like a weird analogy, but when you're looking at your horoscope, I'm someone who doesn't believe in horoscopes, but I think that they can do a lot of good in that when you read your horoscope or you get your cards read or anything like that, I think you sort of subconsciously can block out the things that don't really apply to you and then you heighten the things that really apply to you. And for some people that's like, oh my gosh, this is me, like amazing. And for me it's more like, okay, I get now, this is the thing that I've chosen to focus on, I've subconsciously focused on, this is the thing that's important and that I have to think about, because this was clearly in my mind. I was clearly worried about a relationship with a friend, because I've ignored the bit about new money opportunities, because that's nothing to do with it, but that thing where they said, like, spend time with your loved ones, okay, this is what's got done there. And I think that that's those unconscious things that you can ignore, you can look at a source and you can be like, okay, I can kind of ignore that thing that they said at the beginning, but I'm going to focus on this thing over here. And everyone kind of does that because they filter information and that kind of thing. And I think that it's one of those things that's really tough, because you want to be able to say, actually, we can save everyone. Everyone can believe what we think is the right thing to believe, whatever side we're on. Like everyone, this is because we're the side of logic and we're the side of like truth and rationality. And like, we are what actually is real. And everyone else can be brought onto this side because this is what is real. But there's just so many reasons why people don't believe it, other than just they're a dick. Like, there's so, yeah, like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's so many.
You are a dick.
Yeah.
Has there anybody you've been who's engaged with you online properly as somebody who has the beliefs of a dick, but you think they've done it respectfully, or like, and have they ever changed your mind?
There have been some people who have commented where I'm like, your way of commenting on this just has such, like, you were so close and then you just
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's a lot of people who are like, who say things like, oh, I really liked what you said. Like, this was a really interesting video. You make some really good points. You know, like those other feminists. And I'm like, that's the weird one. Because I'm like, what other people have you been listening to? Because I feel like I make very similar content to most of the other, most of the other gang, the other.
Yeah, but that's more of like a coercion tactic, isn't it? Where it's like, you're amazing.
and all of your sisters and brothers can go and die. But you are the saved one. I will raise you from your humble beginning.
But it's just one of those things where it's kind of like, you know, people who are... It's the same thing as like, you know, you're very pretty for a gay girl. And you're like, oh, okay, mate, thanks. And I'm like, I'm sure your heart's in the right place and you're trying to, like, you don't... But because you don't get the whole, like, community and aspect of that, and that's kind of like not necessarily a legitimate identity to you, you don't think about the impact of, because you're like, okay, being gay isn't that important or that interesting or that good, so actually me saying that you don't seem that gay
is making you feel better.
It's the same as like, you don't talk like a black woman, or like, you know what I mean, like you don't look disabled, like it's a very like that kind of thing. Where I'm like, I know you're trying to, like, you're trying, but you're just swinging a miss.
It's like kindness isn't enough, you have to also. So one of my questions that kind of relates to that is, so as a creator, is it possible to have companies be a dick to you online? And, like, how, you know, you could give some examples if you want, but also just, like, that navigating that space where you're not talking to a person, you're talking to a company, and they have an unwritten slash written but invisible to you, like, set of beliefs that you can't change, and how do you go about, like, reacting to that?
What a leading question, Lena. Yeah. So I'll talk about the restricted mode, YouTube's restricted mode. So this is something that, like, is really frustrating to me. And I've said this before in interviews and stuff, because I know so many people within YouTube who this is, like, completely against everything that they are working to do within the company. This is completely against everything they think. YouTube's very gay. I'm going to just put it out there right now.
Yeah.
Like, everyone who works at YouTube Space London is gay, pretty much.
You're
like,
smarter if you're gay,
like,
right?
That's how it works. You're more in tune with the internet. But
can you give a backstory as to what the YouTube
So essentially, what happened was, this is something that apparently has been around for years and years and no one's really noticed it. There is a mode that you can enable on YouTube. You click a little toggle, and it pulls up restricted mode. And restricted mode, there were, like, a couple of different places in which it was mentioned. So down at the bottom where you could toggle it, it gave a brief description, and then there was a description on YouTube's help page. But essentially it was for, like, families and children. It was, like, the idea was you can toggle this and your toddler won't accidentally see someone, like...
Get run over by a train.
And which seems like a great idea. It's like, actually, like, there's
I'm all for that.
Yeah, it's like you
no child trauma.
You used to be able to just, like, put your kid in front of the TV at, like, 2:30 and know that, like, for the next 2 hours there would be kids' cartoons on and there wouldn't be, like, an advert for knives. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that was something you could do. And then gradually, as you got the children's channels that came out on, like, satellite and Sky and stuff, you could just be like, okay, I know that if I leave my child for screen time for an hour, they're just gonna watch Dora the Explorer and they're not gonna watch Rambo. But now you've got, like, tablets and laptops and phones and things that you give to a kid to do screen time with. If you're doing YouTube videos, if you just autoplay videos, it can start off like, okay, these are relevant, and then slowly it just ascends into, like, weird YouTube. And it's like, you don't, like, that isn't necessarily a safe thing to do.
Yeah.
So hypothetically, that seems like a great thing. Except for the fact that it turns out the YouTube restricted mode was removing completely child-friendly content that had things to do with LGBT people. So content that was absolutely, there was nothing explicit in it at all. Actually, a lot of videos got removed from a couple of channels that were explicitly made for children. Some of them made for children as young as toddlers to understand gay people and gender and stuff like that. So with, like, cute puppets and songs and, like, everything was lovely. Those had videos removed when you looked on it at restricted mode. And so I found this out through Twitter, actually. It's like, a lot of people are like, she was the original one who discovered it, and I was like, no, I'm not that smart, like, come on now. There were a lot of people who were talking about it. I was in New York at the time, and I was, like, I was meant to be packing to go back on the plane to England, but then I had a craving for mac and cheese, so I went to
how all great stories start.
Yeah, I, like, went and got some really good
a
mac and cheese
carbs.
But I was, like, on the way there on the bus and I was, like, so nearly there, and then all this stuff started happening on Twitter, and I didn't have anything with me because I was just like, I'm just going to get mac and cheese. I'm so free. And I was like, I need a notebook. I need to write stuff down. I need to visualize what is happening here. Because these more and more people started to be like, wait, my videos too. And then people were saying to their, you know, subscribers or followers, can someone check for me? Like, I'm on mobile. I can't work out how to do it. And people were coming back being like, screenshots. Here is your channel with, and here is your channel without restricted mode. And some people, their entire channel disappeared. it disappeared from search engines. They didn't have any videos up. And it was just ridiculous. Like, it was such a weird, seemingly so weird, because it was just the kind of thing that I think most of us didn't expect from YouTube, because they had been so supportive of LGBT people in the past in terms of doing like Proud to Be and all of these kind of elements. And so it was something that I think that a lot of us were just like, this would never happen algorithmically or within the makeup of YouTube and within its algorithm. So I very quickly like run to a bookstore, get a notepad. There's a recording on my phone actually, which is like me walking, pretending I'm on the phone to someone and filming a voice memo, because I was like, I'm going to forget what the fuck I'm talking about. And so it's just me like panting, because I'm like speed walking to this bookstore to try and get a notebook, so that because I know that I'm going to have to fly back, and I'm very slowly realizing that I'm about to film a video and edit a video and post a video before I leave for my flight that's in like an hour. So I'm just like, and this, and everyone's walking past, and I'm like, I'm just having a very weird conversation with no one on this phone.
Why won't she let her speak on the other end of the phone?
I know, right? Like, why? And part of me was like, these pauses will just be like the other person speaking. So yeah, it was just ridiculous. So I uploaded this video essentially like talking about what we knew so far, but also talking a little bit about the legacy of it, or the how it is part of a legacy of like sexualizing LGBT people. And then I landed, and then there were a lot of like requests for interviews.
Oh no.
Yeah, yeah, I got off the plane, and it was just like
we got off the plane and things have blown up.
What's happening? So yeah, it was very bizarre. But then there was like a lot of comments on there that were like, you know, good riddance, like would never want to see my child, like I'm supporting gay people, but I don't want my child to see this. And those people don't think that they're like being dicks. They don't think they're hating. They're like, this is totally logical. Like, I'm a nice person. I don't hate gay people. Like, my brother got married to his husband last year. We went to the ceremony, but like, assumedly they didn't take their kids with them to the ceremony. Like, do you know, it was very much like obviously kids,
I'll let you have your
people.
Lifestyle, but I consider it X-rated.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that has been like, that's a constant thing. Like, that's always been there. Like, from the very beginning, when you're looking at like what words are used to describe the queer community, it's all about sex. It's all about what kind of sex they're having, how the sex works, because that is like the thing that, the only thing that's different, right? Because gay people, like, fundamentally, society has changed that, and so queer people have different experiences outside of just sex. But if people were treated equally within society, the difference would, for a lot of people, is just like, it's just how they have sex, which is kind of also ridiculous, because like pretty much anything you can do as a gay couple, you can do as a straight couple. So you're like, okay. But it's that, because otherwise you have to admit that they were like just like you, and that actually the sex was probably similar to some of the sex you were having, and that if that didn't divide you, then what did divide you? Oh god. And so everything had to be that it was like perverted and weird and like sexually deviant, and that was how it worked. And like, then you go through and you have like Anita Bryant, who is an American, basically an American religious leader, who protested the hiring of gay people as teachers. And so she's super famous for like sort of opposing Harvey Milk in San Francisco. And being this voice of, or at least being this kind of like voice around the nation that was like directly opposed to this rise of like a gay man in power, and the movement of like coming out, of like mass coming out, was it basically as a way of saying like, she's saying this and she's getting away with it because you think that there aren't any gay teachers and they'll just be like this one gay teacher that we can rat out, but actually if we come out, we're everywhere. Like, we are your doctor that looks after you and your family, we are your teachers who teach your kids, we
don't
like
mean to
everyone.
Alarm you,
like,
the witch hunt would be out
we
all
like
day.
It's one of those like terrible lines from a sci-fi movie where it's like, this isn't an invasion, they're already here, like, they've been here for years infiltrating our society. This has already happened. Like, this
again,
is a resistance.
This is like an example of like a queer conversation not just being a queer conversation. So it also turns into a conversation about who gets the chance to make choices about your children. Is it companies and the government, or is it you? And then how you know, because at the end of the day, like, YouTube is a free tool that people can have access to, but they're not forced to have access to. It's not part of like their state kind of education that they get provided. So it's like, how do you explain to people that they're not entitled to shut out your content? I don't know.
But equally, like, you could say, I'm not entitled to show my content.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, like, this for me wouldn't be I mean, it would still be an issue because I'd be like, you're a terrible parent.
Mm.
But it wouldn't be an issue if we had like comprehensive education within schools, which covered this and covered it well.
Mm.
That wasn't just like a very special lesson, like that you take when you're 16, and it's like,
it's crazy.
This is gay people. We've brought a gay person in to talk to you, or something awkward. Or like,
I had the experience of like, I went to a Church of England school, so basically we had sex ed scheduled, but the people who were scheduled to teach us sex ed didn't believe in gay sex, so like we had to get one of the teachers that did believe in gay sex to come and teach that one, who was ironically part of the Jesus Army and probably one of the most extreme Christians in the school, but was like, I'm okay with gayness. Let's talk about
the
it.
Fact that you and, like, even had a lesson like that, because we didn't have a lesson like that, and I didn't go to like a religious school, like we had one of those like Christian ethos ones, didn't never talked about gay people in class except for one lesson where at GCSE where we were talking about the Holocaust, and there was like one sentence that was like, also gay men.
Also they killed all the gay men.
But that was just like kind of like a little afterthought. And then English A-level, because we did orange is not the new black. That's not the right
orange
one.
Is
very
not
similar.
The new fruit.
Orange
that
is not
would
the
be
new
great.
Fruit. That was really frustrating for me to read because I hated it so much. And it was like the first piece of like queer female literature I'd ever read, and I hated it. And I was like, oh god, I've like never found anything that like represented me. And I was like so excited because I was like, all of these people have these characters that they can kind of relate to, and I never had that. And I was like, oh fuck, this is gonna be it. And then I was like, oh.
You're like, no, it's like the well of loneliness.
I hate this book so much. Yeah, and if we had teaching in schools where it was like, this isn't just going to be the very special time, like this is going to be implemented, or isn't just going to be like the anti-bullying class about not being mean to gay kids. It's like, it has to be everywhere. It has to be in the anti-bullying policy. It has to be usualised, so it has to be something that you just casually mention. So while you're talking about San Francisco and you do the little fact sheet about the city and geography, because you're learning about fault lines and you learn how many people are there and you learn about how big it is, just mention the fact that it's like the city in the USA that has the largest number of gay households. Because that is, well,
that's one of the geography facts.
That is a geography fact. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's something that's just not, and you
it's
don't
like
dwell
geography.
On it. You're just like, yeah, this is kind of interesting and important. And then you can be like, cause and effect. Do gay people cause earthquakes? Think about it. Science tells us no. Although, to be fair, now I'm like, wait, do I now think that gay people cause the earth disasters?
Like,
I'm like, oh god, maybe they had a point. Maybe all those people who said we cause like
it's
tornadoes.
God.
I was like, oh, it's totally
God's
real.
Probably smiting. That's probably what
That's
it
how
is.
That works.
I guarantee. So I suppose the takeaway from that is that, like, companies go from being unfavourable to being dicks when they don't contextualise themselves in the society they're operating in. So, like, the point of how bad the restricted modes implications are is because children can't get it anywhere else, and that amplifies
absolutely
how bad it is, rather than, it, you know, it's also just... Yeah.
And as well, the response. I think that they've come good on their response afterwards, but their initial response was very much, and they like both their initial response online, and also they called me in for a meeting, and I will happily say that I was like, no. I think that they thought that they had someone who wasn't from PR but had clearly been prepped by PR, who was saying a lot of lines that were in that initial statement that got released, that was very much like, this is a mode which has existed for ages, almost like, why are you making a fuss? It's been here for ages. And it's something which only affects a very small number of users. And it's basically like, not even really, no apology, no like, we're going to look into it, no nothing. And they said the same thing to me. They were like, there's a very small number of users who use this. And I'm like, How dare you, basically.
I suppose
like
the people who are children of people who would use restricted mode specifically to get out gay content are probably the people who specifically need it the most.
Yeah. I mean, basically. But also, I'm like, I was looking this woman in the face, and I was like, how? And there's been a couple of situations in my life where I've, like, someone has blindsided me because they've said something that's just so ridiculous. And so many times in the past, I've literally just, like, been too shocked to say anything. I've just kind of let the conversation continue because I'm like, what just happened? And a lot of it has been about queer stuff. Whereas I literally was like, how dare you? And she was like, oh shit, like PR didn't prepare me for this, for the comebacks. I was like, it is, if it was one child that was being denied access to this, that would be too many. And you're saying, even if you're saying it's 1% of users, I'm sorry, how many users do you have?
Mm.
How many millions of users do you have? 1% of a million. Turns out it's more than just like, oh, there's one person somewhere there.
Yeah, like,
there's a significant amount of people who are using this. And this is being used, and from what we could tell from what they were saying, was that this was also being used in schools or in institutions. Mm. So not only were these kids potentially not being able to access home, but they couldn't even go to school and try and find it, which is what everyone else, what we used to do when we were kids.
Yeah.
Was that we'd go to school. And the same thing happened, but it was sanctioned by... schools.
Mm.
So I remember when I was at school, we tried to get onto the Stonewall website, we tried to get onto like youth groups, helplines, stuff to do with LGBT things, and they were all blocked explicitly for lesbian and gay content, and it said that on the screen.
Yeah.
So you knew it wasn't like one of those weird ones where it blocks a random website and you'll laugh about the fact you can't do your homework because it's like blocked this website. It explicitly said that was why it was blocked.
Yeah.
And that was one of the times I was totally blindsided, was when it was like, oh, you know, does it, essentially like, oh yeah, we can just have like a password so the kids like over 16 can access it if they ask for the password. Because obviously we can't allow any of the, we can't allow any children younger than that to see it. And I was just like, what? Wait,
also,
what?
The whole point is that like to ask for the password is
you have to out yourself, or you have to like put yourself in potential danger in order to like say, I need the password to access this information to keep me safe. I'm like, this is not... I was literally just like, what is happening?
It's the opposite of the answer.
What is happening?
Do you have any advice for people who might be listening who are from companies, maybe smaller, and are trying not to be a dick to you? So maybe like with sponsorships, or like, you know, do you have any like guidelines for people who are like, maybe don't try and sponsor me to be your gay person? Or like, you know...
I mean, yeah, no, that's fair. Like, I think that there's gonna be a difference between just being like, yes, we want to have the gay person who is going, we're going to sponsor, like being a, if you're talking about sponsorship, so like you have a gay YouTuber and it's like, yes, we have ticked the gay demographic.
Mm.
I think it's a fine line between that and then being like, actually, I've watched your channel and I know that the way that you come at queer issues is very educational or very humorous or very whatever it might be. We think that we could work together because of this reason. That to me is very different than just being like,
you're gay.
Well, we like, could totally do
you
this.
Are intelligent about talking about gay issues and you have the experience, therefore we'd like to work with you.
I mean, you can reach out, but you're probably not gonna get anything. Like, I've had a lot of people who've reached out to me who have basically just been like, gay, and I'm like, I mean, it's
very clear,
it's very clear your product won't work for me because it just doesn't quite... It would be like coming to me and being like, can you talk about like gay adoption, like how to adopt as a gay? And I'm like, but I'm not your demographic. I don't have, like, I don't speak to this demographic. Unless you're wanting like kind of 18 to 24 year old lesbians to be adopting kids, which but I feel like it's probably not what you're going for. Mm. That's probably not going to help. But I think that kind of thing is very similar to anyone who you approach for a sponsorship. Like it's that kind of, you just think about how you would want to be treated and how you'd want that to happen. And actually, if you don't know, if you're like, if you are doing the stupid questions of Lena thing and you're like, is it okay for me to...
I love how that's a verb now. It's like, you. A stupid question for the Lena them.
But do you know what I mean? Like, it's
no,
like,
no,
if
no,
you,
I know.
If you're not sure, then it's fine to ask. It's fine to just approach as like, hey, I'm so-and-so and I work for this company. We're really looking to include like as diverse as possible representation in terms of who we work with for sponsorships. We really, really like your channel and your content. And we think that there's something within the ethos of like our brand and your brand that like might fit together, either because, you know, you're running a campaign that's comedy based and this person has a comedy channel, or this person talks about pop culture or film reviews and you have some new app that is to do with it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, something that actually works together. And it's totally fine to then be like, you know, we understand the audience is specifically LGBT focused. We're actually wondering if we could do something with the fact that our app has a section for LGBT films.
Mm.
And we thought actually it might be interesting, like, would that be something up to? But we also totally understand if you don't want to focus on that specifically, we have other options. And that's totally fine to be like, hey, like, we understand that you have a totality of a person and we approached you because we like your content and because we saw that they're actually like, this is a potential idea for a collaboration, but we're kind of open either way.
Yeah, you tell us how you want us to interact with you.
People are complex, right? Like, some people would jump on that and be like, amazing, oh my god, there's a whole load of LGBT films, I really wanted to do a video about like a lack of representation. It would fit so well to talk about the fact, like, you know, I could bring you guys in by saying there are places that you can find representation. Here is a whole curated section of the best LGBT films on this new app. That would actually be value added for the audience, etc. Or you might have someone that's like, at the kind of like, do you know what, actually I've done so many videos about being gay and I just want to do something that's a bit different. I want to focus more on, like, I want to be able to expand out my film review business to be about more than just gay films. I need to be talking about other representation. And you don't know that, and it's fine to not know the answer to those questions, and not to, because I think often what happens with that is that you feel so much pressure that you're like, oh, I'm just not gonna answer them. Too much hassle to try and ask this person. And I think a lot of people do that when they're like picking people for this kind of stuff. It's like, it's much easier for me not to have to do the representation in case we get it wrong, in case we, you know. And for a long time that's been safe, and I feel like that's changing now that people are calling attention to like all white male panels or, you know, things that, stories that don't tell anything.
Yeah, it's actually more worthwhile them approaching you than not.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you feel about people online being allies or feeling like they're allies, but maybe missing the mark? So, for example, one that I feel a bit weird about is the filters on Facebook, where it's like a rainbow if you're not gay. But then it's kind of always that, like, speaking and not erasing that from your timeline or the way you interact with the world, and making sure you're not silent on those issues. But then also, when the way we use the internet so often is about our profile and our personal lives and who we are, and it becomes a bit of a catalogue of like, here's who I am, I'm an ally. Does that appropriate? Like, how do you feel when people have like a rainbow filter on Facebook?
I think it's one of those, so like, there's a really great sketch from, I think it's College Humor, about trying to work out if he's gay or not, which is about a guy who's just trying to work out if another guy is gay, and they go through a load of stuff to oppose them. One of the things is like, wait, he had a rainbow filter in his profile pic, and it's like, oh, straight people are doing that all the time now. And it's like, it's I think it's one of those things that is the same as many other things, where it's like, I stand with this thing, where it's like, cool, but what did that do other than like signal to other people that you have decided this is a stance you've got? And if you're completely okay with that being all that you do, like, you're the one that has to live with that. Whereas if you want to actually say, okay, so if I've said to the world that I am an ally, or if I've said to the world that I support this particular cause or fight or whatever, what am I actually doing other than changing my profile picture? And I think that, and sometimes that can be a big thing where actually you say, do you know what? Me changing my profile picture is a big deal, because I am friends with all of my family on Facebook, and my family has a load of, all of the adults are super homophobic, and they're kind of raising the kids in that way, and I want to be a voice, I want to show them that they can come and talk to me. And I'm like, sweet, that is something a thing that like an actual true real ally would do, And I think that that is completely an act of allyship. It doesn't have to be something that's really, like, public and like display and they show it to everyone and all that stuff. It can just be someone who's like, actually, I can start small. I can start with my family that I have an emotional and real connection to, and start to build bridges across these generations, or start to be a point of safe harbour for these kids who might need it, who are part of my family. And that pointing out I'm an ally is actually really powerful. And it's like, yeah, that's very much fair enough. Like, my brother had a similar thing. He went to a school where no one came out. He went to an all-boys school. I knew a lot of the boys in that year. And they would not come out until they knew they were never going back to the school. They didn't have to do resets or anything. And they'd all sort of come out in the next week. Like, it was because they were like, I'm never going to come out of that school. And then my brother basically came in and was sort of like, my sister is a lesbian. So every time anyone did like anything, anytime anyone said anything that was like remotely homophobic, or like any kind of like, someone would say something that was sexist and they'd be like, you cannot say sexist things, you cannot say racist things, and he'd be like, oh, also you cannot say homophobic things, because that was like, he was like, actually this is a thing that I can do. And so he had a good like half dozen kids come out to him at a school that had never had anyone else come out, and he was like, some he didn't even know, he would come up to him because he was so vocal about it. And that can be really powerful. And I think to not necessarily see it as being like a big display that you have to like prove yourself in these various ways. I think that a lot of allyship is about like making space, and about both making space to kind of like clear the floor to be like, this is the thing that you can talk about, and also making space in your life to think about it or to share things, because I think anything that's from the voices of that group, and if there is like a discussion within that particular marginalized group that you don't know what to think about, or you're everyone seems to be arguing within that group about something, then share multiple points of view. Mm-hmm. Have it be a discussion. Don't have it be like, I am the voice of authority on the gay issue.
Here yeah, is don't me worry, sharing I've, the gay I've spoken to the gay community results. And here's their
this is the conclusion they've message. Come to. Yeah. And I think that that can come in many forms. Like, I've talked about this on my channel a lot about like what ways you can get involved in causes you're interested in. And it might be that it's like money raising or fundraising or something like that. It might be that you get involved in the capacity in which you work, or it might be that you get involved in terms of like policy. Mm. And those are all things that you can do as an ally. You don't have to be gay to like do a sponsored something for like Stonewall, or, you know, you don't have to be gay to utilise your job as a teacher in order to propose to your head that actually we should probably do some kind of PSHE lesson on this. Or we could get a speaker in, or we could do something like that. Or, you know, if you're a student at school, like we had, I went back to my old school because we had some students who were LGBT allies very passionately, who were like, this is something that needs to happen in this school, and got me back in. And that's something that can be like, even just in the place where you are, if you can start fostering that environment and empowering those people who are like future leaders and future, you know, future people who can have influence, not in like the like digital influencer way, but just in terms of like being people who can speak out and be educated, and like not necessarily in an educational institution way, but just because they have that information, you've empowered them with like other people's words and other people's experiences. That can be just as powerful. I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea of like you're only an ally if you'll like come to the protest and like march along with us, because I think that that can be very powerful. To have allies come to Pride and like support people and like get them there, but being physically present is the only way to like be an ally, basically.
So it's more like you just have to check your own intention.
Yeah.
And like, nobody knows apart from you why you're doing it, but then there needs to be. So as well, like Facebook has just installed like an emoji, so like, so you can have like, you can feel happy about a post, you can feel sad about a post, you can be excited, you can be angry, or you can be rainbow flag.
Yep. That's a nice Pride month situation.
But is gay an emotion? Can you be can you feel queer about it?
Yeah, I feel definitely.
It's like everything is like,
it's really funny. So I've like done I feel like I've never really lived through a reclaiming of something. Like, it's something that I definitely understand intellectually, and it wasn't until I found myself like anytime anything happened that I was like nauseatingly adorable or cute or like wonderful. Mm. And I'd just be like, gay. But I was like, oh, that's what it is. Like, that insult that everyone would say for something that was, like, gross or disgusting or perverted, by literally being like, no, actually, what gay is like, something that's, like, wonderful and gross. And, like, so, like, if I have two, like, friends who are heterosexual who are, like, have done something amazing for each other, or they've, like, you know, surprised the other with something, whatever, I'll be like, gay. Because I'm like, actually, yeah, because gay is, like, wholesome and beautiful and lovely and just, like, sweet and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't realise I'd done it until like a few months ago, and I was like, oh wow, yeah, that's, and like so many gay people I know do the same thing.
Yeah,
that's like something that's, it's almost like a weird code between you, because I have had friends who have done it before in front of straight people, and who clearly didn't know they were gay, and been like, you can't say that, and I'm like,
you're like, no, we've come full circle.
I feel like, yeah, we have to explain. It's like we've almost memed it now. I don't know what to tell you, because it was such a big part of the childhood that it was something that like you couldn't even argue against, because it was just so nonsensical in the first place. You can't logically answer to like, gay. You're like, no, I'm not a gay. But you're gay. What's happening? No, I'm bad. Well, I'm doing the bad thing. What's happening? Like, it's, do you know what I mean? It's such a weird of doing it. I think that allyship is just I think it's just listening. Like, it's so much listening. And then listening some more. And then not. And then listening some more. And then asking a question and listening to the answer. And asking another question, and then realizing that that person is like done answering questions, and then going over here and doing some research on the things that they said, and then like, do you know what I mean? Because there are people who are very much just like, I've done answering questions, and then I'm one of those people that like is never done answering.
You're like,
questions.
I will answer
all of the questions, because it's it's that kind of thing. But there are some times when you're like, you could just Google this, but then you're also like, actually, in the world of fake news, can you though?
Yeah.
Like, actually, can you just Google, like, how do trans people have sex?
And yeah, without so, getting hit with something yeah, strange. Yeah,
exactly. And that's the thing where that's one of those things where it's like, actually, you also don't want to be asking the trans person. So it's not just about Googling, it's about like Googling well, if that makes sense, and looking at multiple sources and working out like what might be. So what might be an option if you're like, actually, the questions I'm about to ask are super invasive. It's like, do I need to know this? Will it like actually matter? Is this, and if it is, if it's like, actually, there's a reason why you're asking it, because you've been asked it by someone like at a school you're teaching at, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna have to do a sex ed class and I've been asked this question, I actually need to know it. Ask instead about like what source of information are accurate.
Yeah,
so don't specifically have to ask this just one
like,
question.
How do you have gay sex? It's like, I've seen that people like, this is here and this article's here, where would you,
which one makes more sense? Or even saying open, like Twitter is a great tool because it is open to, like Facebook is often more closed up because it's just your friends and family and stuff like that you've already added into your circle, whereas on Twitter you can just be like, okay, I'm gonna open this up and say very honestly, like I teach this class, or I have a member of my family, or I have a friend or whatever who needs to answer this question that I don't want to ask people directly and kind of confront them and make them answer to me, but if anyone wants to volunteer that information, I would be super grateful. And that, like, just like deprioritizing yourself and like prioritizing the people around you who are part of that group who are needing to like give you information or support or, you know, reassurance or anything like that. And there will be some people who'll be very happy to talk all the time very openly, and I'm one of those people because I think it's, I'm like so done with everything being secret and like mystified and people not having information, whereas there are other people that are like, actually, it's exhausting to have to like justify myself all the time, and so many of these questions are actually like, have been experienced as microaggressions. Like, how do women even have sex together has been something that is constantly asked of me, like since I was like, since people assumed that I was gay when I was so it was year 8 that people started assuming I was gay, because in a PSHE lesson, which is not about gay people, it's about something totally different, this woman came in and did an exercise where she was like, go to one side of the room if you think one thing, and go to the other side of the room if you think the other thing. And one of the questions she asked was like, would you stay friends with someone who said that they fancied someone of the same gender? And I was the only person in the entire class that said it will be fine. So everyone was like, Rowan is a lesbian. And so I was thinking, like, I was like,
I'm outing myself.
Yeah,
as an
I was
ally
like,
before
yeah,
I'm
it was very it. Strange. And so I'm like 13 years old, but people in the school are like, she is definitely a lesbian. And so it's like getting asked about how lesbians have sex when you're like, 12 or 13, and you're like, like, I don't know. I got nothing.
So it's almost like people, if they're like, we should have like a battery bar. We're like, how exhausted are you by questions? Could you tell me? On a scale of 1 to 10, how exhausted are you? Please put it in your profile and then I will know. You're like, I'm a 5 out of 10 right now.
It's very, I mean, like, but that's also a way, like, if you have a friend who's kind of like on a standing order of like, you can ask me a question by putting it in like Facebook Messenger and I might not answer straight away because I might just be too exhausted with questions, but I'll answer at some point.
Yeah.
It's not urgent. Like, I'll get around to it kind of thing. But yeah, it's one of those things that's very, a lot of stuff to do with LGBT people with like sex related or body related, especially trans people. And that, and like that curiosity or that need to know becomes like a lot more personal because it is so explicit and inappropriate for you to have asked that question. Whereas I feel like there are other identities that maybe the questions would be a little bit more easy to handle in terms of looking at like, questions you might ask the alternative to. So you wouldn't ask like a cis person like, so what your genitals look like then, like that would be weird. But I might ask someone who is Christian a question about like, oh, like do you go to church like all the time, or do you just go at Christmas? And then if I went to a Muslim and was like, so if you're going to a mosque, do you like, does your family go all the time, or do they just go occasionally? That wouldn't necessarily be an invasive question, because it's like, actually, this is something that it doesn't have kind of like a weird privacy behind it. But then there are some questions like that that you know absolutely nothing about, that you're like, actually, maybe it is a really invasive question to ask someone how often they go there, and actually maybe that is a question they've been asked before as a way of saying, you're like, you're not a real Muslim if you don't go this many times.
So
actually there's so much baggage that you don't necessarily know.
So say for something like, so I like, if I just met you and I was like, how did you come out, that could be, that's pretty invasive, because you wouldn't ask like somebody, I don't know,
how did you reveal this big secret about yourself that nobody knew and that caused you a lot of
stress?
Like,
how did you realise you were straight? Like, you wouldn't ask that, or like, Or like, what's your relationship like with your parents? Like, it's very... If somebody asked me that, I'd be like, why do you want to know?
Yeah, whereas when you're gay, you're like, oh, because you think that they either like...
Yeah, like suppress
me,
you,
and like threw me out of the house. And like, yeah. I think it's one of those things that it's just like, what level, what comfort level are you? So like, if someone brings it up to you, if someone's like, oh, you know, I'm gay, I'm actually going home to visit my parents and my girlfriend's coming with me, that's like a lot of information that got offered, in which like a normal person continuing the conversation at that level of like commitment would be like, oh, that's really cool. So you're like, have they met your girlfriend before? And like all these kind of questions that are like actually quite a normal way of doing it, because they've given you that information.
Yeah, they're leading,
that's
but
where
they're
you
not
can
like
go.
Backing you into a corner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I like it. Thank you for helping us be less dickish.
Yes. I think it's because I'm like, this is what I think about being less dickish. But all these other people think totally different
exactly.
things. So like, it's a like, minefield. Have fun, kids. I just think it's one of those things where on the internet, like, you can't please everyone all the time. And as much as you might think, oh, that's that thing I really regret, was probably a dick, there are also other people that are like, oh, God, I snapped too much at that person who was probably not really being a dick. Like, there's everyone thinks back and is like, oh,
like,
I could have done that better,
yeah.
and like, okay, that's fine, or whatever. And I think it's just like being that kind of consideration of like, do no harm, but take no shit, which is a badge on my wall that Lena really liked when she saw it, and which is a philosophy that I like to prescribe to. And it sometimes can make me very stressed, because I'm like, every time I realize I have done harm, I'm just like, have an existential crisis, and I'm like, I'm the worst person in the world. Oh, God. But yeah, it's just like, when you're trying to be an ally, it's just like prioritizing other people. When you're posting something online, it's like taking a breath, thinking about it. And actually, if you regret it, just going back and just saying, like, I'm really sorry, that was out of line. I was, like, kind of stressed that day. It wasn't anything to do with you. Because I think that admitting that we're wrong and apologising is something that, like, the online space doesn't really foster very easily, because it is this thing that can come back to haunt you, and apologies mean nothing, and, like, it kind of becomes a bit of a strange, pressurised world. So I think there is something really powerful in being able to go back and you see a lot of, like, positivity online where two people... the start a conversation thread and you think it's all going to go horribly wrong, and then someone corrects someone and someone admits they're wrong, and actually it's like, okay, cool, that was a nice amicable conversation about from two people who clearly were coming from very different places, and actually it's actually worked out really nicely. So I think it's just that being
it's
nice people,
like,
in
Hollywood
general.
Car crashes,
yeah.
Sometimes
exactly.
they have like happy endings,
yeah, exactly.
They
sometimes.
Walked off into the sunset.
Sometimes the internet can be a good place.
Yeah,
exactly.
Cool, thank you.
Thanks, Lena.
Thank you so much for listening to I Am Not Being Funny, but the podcast where we ask the questions you pretend you knew the answers to, or the ones you didn't think to ask. I am looking for more good news for my Gumption Roundup. That is when I tell you guys about good things that are happening in the world. So if you have any links or stories of things that are happening that are good, please tweet them at me at Lena Norms. That's LeenaNorim. Don't forget to grab your tickets for the London Podcast Festival. As I said, the link is po.st/Lena@podcastfest, or you can find it on my Twitter. If you like this podcast, please leave a review, particularly on iTunes. It helps people find the podcast. And log off and bog off, I guess.
If you have some questions but don't want to send me none, have no fear, the podcast here, it's I'm not being funny, but with Lena.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.